Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
To the Nemecol and Hotline, talk to our good friend John McGonigal of the Post-Gazette. John, 24 hours from now, we will have a really good idea who this Pitt team is, will we not?
Yeah, Paul, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. By this point tomorrow, I guess they'll be maybe in the fourth quarter deciding who will win. Maybe there will be a winner by then. We'll see how this game goes for Pitt and Clemson, a big one, obviously. You know, Pitt ranked 23rd in the country, Clemson unranked, but you know, it's still Clemson, as Pitt's players and coaches have said all week.
Exactly, and I think that the big thing is, you know, if beating the brand name team is what Pitt really needs to do this year, because there's not going to be many opportunities for them to, turn heads and impress people. And this has got to be the game they do it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the opportunities after this game. Pitt hosts Miami next week, and you think, oh, Miami, right? I mean, that's a brand name. But one, they haven't been Miami in quite some time. And two, they're especially not Miami this season on a third-string quarterback, Derek King hurt. That team is in shambles. You go at Duke after that, and then home against North Carolina and Virginia in back-to-back weeks before traveling to Syracuse. And Clemson's not ranked tomorrow. I don't think they're going to have another ranked opponent the rest of this regular season. Maybe if they make it to the ACC title game, you'd be playing a ranked Wake Forest or NC State potentially. But this is the biggest test on the schedule on the regular season, for the entire season. Look back at the Tennessee game, look back at what they handled in Virginia Tech last week. Tomorrow is the biggest game of the regular season. And I think, Pitt's going to come out of here either 5-2 and still in solid standing in the ACC, given their position in the Coastal, or they'll be 6-1. And already right now, they're the betting favorite to win the conference as a whole. But if they beat Clemson tomorrow, they'll be the prohibitive favorite moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's just to me, if they lose this one, then obviously it's not good for them. But I think it's also, legitimately the ACC could be in danger of not having a team ranked within a week or two, because I think I looked it up, NC State and Wake Forest both have, games they actually could lose.
Yeah, I know that Wake Forest plays at Army this week, and I know people might not think much of Service Academy football, but Army's 4-1 this year, so you never know. And NC State, you look at the Atlantic, NC State already has that win over Clemson in the back pocket, so I'm interested to see how that side of the conference even plays out beyond tomorrow. Watching the game, I think if Pitt ends up at 5-2, if they lose to Clemson, one, depending on how it all happens, right, I don't think there would be much shame in that. It's not like they're favored by 20 points tomorrow. Clemson is not Clemson of the past, but they still have a lot of talent. They still have a coaching staff that's won 6 straight ACC titles and made as many college football playoff appearances in that time. So look, if they lose tomorrow, it's not the end of the world by any means, because you still control your own fate in the Coastal. Your main competitor in the Coastal is Virginia. They already have 2 conference losses. So beyond that, their schedule is still very favorable. But obviously they want to go out there tomorrow and make a statement. And not only the team, but Kenny Pickett, who is a guy who has not had success against Clemson, his previous two meetings, losing the ACC title game in 2018. And then last year, you know, he had three interceptions in his first nine passing attempts down there in Death Valley. So he wants to avenge that a little bit. This game's been circled on his calendar for a long time.
Yeah, I would assume that. And of course, you know, it's a secondary thing, but this is the kind of game where he can put himself, you know, really put himself on the national radar and map. I mean, not that he's not there yet, but he's, you know, this is the kind of game that really can put him in a different position, you know, different position and different light for people around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, if he wasn't there already, if he comes out there against Clemson and then performs the way he thinks he can perform, and frankly, the way that he has been performing so far this season, then yeah. Last I checked, you know, the sports books, I think there were maybe six or seven guys that had better Heisman odds than Kenny Pickett going into this weekend. If he ends up putting up, what, 350 yards and three touchdowns on Clemson, or even like makes a like game-changing play to win them that game, I think his odds get boosted a little bit more after that. You know, he's playing on a different level right now, obviously. North of 1,900 passing yards, 21 touchdown passes, one interception. You know, it's hard to get better numbers than that. But at the same time, he hasn't faced a defense this season as good as Clemson is, and not just their front seven, but they've got some talent in the secondary, obviously, too. So I think this is going to be a tough test for Pitt's offense. I think it's going to be a tough test for Clemson's defense. You know, obviously they faced Georgia week one, but beyond that, you know, Boston College on a backup quarterback, you know, NC State, their offense isn't all of that. I mean, Syracuse, like, you know, this is obviously a good Clemson defense in that they have all the talent in the world. Brent Venables is still, you know, dialing up those plays, but they haven't had a rough schedule necessarily outside of the Georgia game either.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is that, you know, the ACC is down. I think we all know that, and we, you know, got to figure out how far down it is, but you made mention of Clemson's defense, and they do have a pretty good defensive coordinator who's done it a long time. They've got a lot of five-star guys. They could give Pitt some problems, couldn't they?
Yeah, for sure. And the two areas that I look at when I look at Clemson's defense is the red zone and in terms of giving up big plays. And those are two areas that Pitt's offense has really thrived on this season. In the past couple of seasons under Mark Whipple, you know, Pitt's been pretty much a 50-50 team in terms of scoring a touchdown in the red zone. This year, that touchdown conversion rate is 80%. That's top 10 in the country. But you look at Clemson and what Brent Venables' defensive unit's been able to do so far this season in the red zone, they're allowing a touchdown on 28% of red zone trips. That's second best in the country behind Georgia, which everyone obviously talks about as a top defense in the country. So if Pitt's going to win this game, they're going to have to finish off drives. They can't settle for field goals. And they have not done that so far this season. They haven't really settled for field goals, which was really the black mark against this offense last season and even the season prior. I think back to that 2019 game against Miami that they settled for four field goals and lost 16-12. They can't be settling for field goals, and I think Pat Narduzzi, Mark Whipple, and Kenny Pickett know that.
Well, and I think if they settle for some field goals, then all of a sudden – you bring into the equation the ability, you know, Clemson gets a pick six or they return a punt or, you know, one of those big plays maybe changes the game if you're settling for field goals.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, against a Clemson defense that you figure, at least based on their pedigree and based on their talent, that you're not going to be putting up 50 points against. It's not like you can afford to waste opportunities. Now, on the flip side, though, you had mentioned, you know, maybe a pick six or maybe a punt return. I think Clemson's going to need one of those to win this game. I'm not saying that they can't do it by any means, but I think judging by the way that offense has played this season, I mean, we talked about this earlier in the week, how bad not only DJ Uiagalelei, the quarterback, but, you know, Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator, their wide receivers just failing to create separation, really catch the ball when they have the opportunity to do so. It's an offensive line that's had four combinations in six games so far, and they're going to be missing their starting center. And Joseph Ngata as well, their leading receiver, came out today, Clemson reporters, saying that he has COVID and he's going to be missing the game. So you have all these guys that are out for Clemson, and it's a unit that hasn't clicked yet that's looked really uncomfortable. And, I mean, they needed a fake punt last Friday night to end up pushing one of their drives through and scoring a touchdown at Syracuse, only managing 17 points there. So this is a Clemson offense. You just can't give them hope. You can't give them these free plays. You can't give them a pick six or even like a long return. You can't squander red zone opportunities. Special teams, you're going to have to be sound. Because Uiagalelei and that offense is going to need every play that they get, every freebie that they get.
Well, no, that's the big thing. If you look at it, that they are going to probably need some help like that from time to time if they're going to be able to score enough points to win this game. Pitt, obviously, I think their offense is clicking, and one thing that nobody has really talked about is it feels like the offensive line has really sort of come together and is a big reason why the offense is clicking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they went into that Virginia Tech game ranked, I believe it was eighth in the country in terms of pass blocking by Pro Football Focus. And that really, when you just flip on the tape and the film and what they've done so far this season, that was obvious. They were protecting Kenny Pickett really well. He was stepping into his throws downfield. He obviously has a very good feel for the pocket, and that's an area that he's improved on this season. But you know, the blockers up front have been doing well for him. And then you saw the running game, the run blocking, really take kind of the next step at Virginia Tech. Now, obviously, I think Clemson's front seven is quicker, better, more talented than Virginia Tech's is. So I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball like they did last weekend in Blacksburg. But Izzy Abanikanda, with 140 rushing yards on 21 carries, he wasn't getting hit at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he was, you know, there were holes open for him. He was getting 2, 3, 4 yards downfield before he had to make someone miss or bounce off a tackle. And that's credit to the offensive line. You know, center Owen Drexel, guards Marcus Miner, who transferred in from Maryland, and Jake Cradle. And then at tackle, you have Gabe Hoy and Carter Warren. These guys are all seniors. These guys have been around the block. And it's about time that these guys are gelling. And, you know, it just takes time sometimes. And we're seeing that from Dave Borbley's offensive line so far.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, it looks like it's really coming together. But when you add it all up, give us your thoughts on how you feel like this game might play out.
Yeah, I have Pitt winning. I have them 31-16. I think everyone's been waiting for Clemson's offense to click. And I'm kind of a believe it when I see it kind of guy, and I haven't seen it yet this season. So I'm going to assume that it's going to keep, struggling here. And I think that Pitt's front seven, Sirasie Dennis and Cam Bright, Phil Campbell will be back and healthy at linebacker, Kalijah Kansi at tackle. I think these guys can really get after DJ Uiagalelei, pressure him, cause issues at their RPO mesh point, and get him off kilter, get him off balance, and get the crowd into it. So I think Pitt wins. I think they do enough offensively, and I don't think Clemson's offense will be up for it.
All right, John, I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking some time, and we'll see you tomorrow in the press box, sir.
Absolutely. See you then, Paul.
All right, that is John McGonigal. I'm Paul Zeiss. It's 93.7 The Fan. How you doing tonight? Are you as excited as the rest of the city is for this big Clemson Pitt game tomorrow?
I mean, it's crazy to me that, think about it, Pitt has been in the ACC, this is the ninth season, and they haven't hosted Clemson yet. It's kind of wild to me that Clemson's never been here throughout its run, and by the time Clemson finally gets here, I guess that first or second year they weren't the ACC champs because the very first game. Well, Florida State hasn't been back, as you well know, since the very first game in the ACC at Heinz Field. So I don't know, this whole scheduling system, and they're not going to make the conferences bigger, and you're not going to play everybody. So that's the wild part to me, that one of the – it's crazy because Clemson wasn't even a dynasty because you had Alabama that was objectively better than them over the past 6 or 7 years. But if you took away Alabama, you could say this Clemson run of up until this year of 5 or 6 years is one of the best in college football, you know, in the generation, certainly, maybe history. But they weren't even the best in their own era. But anyway – so, yeah, I think it's kind of cool just having Clemson in town, period. It's kind of like would have been whenever Pitt would play Miami in the 90s there in the Big East, and when Miami was still a powerhouse.
Well, the way it is, you play against the other conference or the other side, everybody has their quote-unquote rivalry team, you know, and with Pitt, it's Syracuse. So Pitt plays Syracuse every year home and home. And then the other games, I guess, are determined. You play basically play everybody home and home over a 12-year period.
Well, I guess that's right. Is there somebody who hasn't been, so every 12 years? So in theory, I guess, was it Wake Forest? Has Wake Forest been here yet?
I do not I do not think the Fighting Wake Forests have been here. No.
I'm sure that'll pack them in. Although let's all make laugh at Wake Forest, but they're still undefeated and are the favorite to get to the title game probably at this point. Especially if Pitt wins tomorrow, that would make I think Wake the clear favorite to win that the Atlantic Division, and we could see. Anyway, yeah, I get it. I mean, other than the natural rival thing, I mean, Pitt and Syracuse do have a history. I guess that's okay. But other than that, I just feel like if you're in a conference, some of those SEC the scheduling, right? They don't play. What was it? Did Alabama hadn't played Georgia in 25 years or something crazy? Like, you know, it's just like wild to think they're in the same conference and these guys aren't even playing each other, or you know, once a decade or whatever it is. But that's neither here nor there, Paul. That's probably not what you wanted to call and talk.
It is not, but it's incredible. It's incredible that we have a big game here this weekend. Doesn't involve the Steelers.
Yeah. that's a good point. That worked out really well for Pitt too. That they really have the whole the spotlight now of the city, really. You know, I know the Penguins are playing, but certainly the Pirates aren't playing. And this is their chance. I mean, this is – they got out in front of – you know, they got Clemson in a down year, and they have their best team here in a while. And, you know, you still have the – we'll see how – you know, Clemson still has a good defense. We'll see where they end up for the season. But they're certainly not as good as they've been the last 4 or 5 years here. But – they still have that cachet to them no matter what. And, you know, people will pay attention to this game. And if they beat Clemson, that's going to be worth more than other wins just because of the name recognition and all that nationally. And it'll really kind of – it really could turn into a special season.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, the Fighting Knitters tomorrow have an exciting game against Illinois. I was asking somebody this the other day, and, you know, you've covered the Big Ten. You've been a Big Ten guy and this and that. Is there a more nondescript, innocuous, less than mediocre, blah program in the country than Illinois?
Yeah, it's funny though. They had those like, remember they went to the friggin' Rose Bowl the one year, and they just got their doors blown off by USC. Like when USC was probably the Reggie Bush USC, or at least right after Reggie Bush. I can't remember the exact year now, but Ron Zook was there. And you know, Illinois kind of snuck in, and I think it was because Ohio State went to the title game, so they were like second place, and they were like 8-4 or something. And a Rose Bowl took the next best Big Ten team that year. It was a bad year for the Big Ten, and Illinois was in the Rose Bowl and just was totally outmatched and outclassed by USC. It was just kind of funny that like this is the best the Big Ten could do for their representative in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I actually forgot all about that season, but yeah. I was looking. Let's see, They had Lovie Smith took them to the Red Box Bowl, and they lost 35-20. Tim Beckham took them to the Heart of Dallas Bowl, and they lost 35-18. Vic Cronin took them in 2011 to the Fight Hunger Bowl, and they beat UCLA 20-14. So, yes, you are correct. Yeah. You are correct. How about this? In 2001, they were in the Sugar Bowl. I forgot all about that team, too.
Wow. Is that Kurt Kittner era? Is that what that is?
Yeah. They got their doors blown off by LSU. I do remember that game. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Everyone's able to sneak in there.
That team just seems to be, I mean, there's nothing that really stands out about that team ever.
Yeah, they've been kind of, you know, punching above their weight class, getting these, they're trying with coaches, but they're always kind of recycled coaches, right? Lovie Smith is an NFL coach. That didn't work out. Now they're bringing in Bert Bielema, who was, good at Wisconsin, but bombed out in the SEC and brought him back to the Big Ten. And it's early. I don't want to pass judgment, but it's very, but, you know, not going to be so good there. And, you know, Ron Zook was the coach of Florida. He got fired. He ends up in Illinois. They always kind of get these like retreads. So they're kind of big names ish, and it doesn't really work out. And they did. You know, other than the Red Box Bowl and whatever, and their one shot of glory in the Rose Bowl there, and the Sugar Bowl. So every once in a while, they've been a better program than Indiana in the Big Ten over the past, 25 years, let's say, Indiana last year notwithstanding. But other than that, at least they get to the, occasionally sneak out that 7-5 season to get to a bowl game or something, other than that, I can't, because Purdue had a good run there with Drew Brees and Kyle Wharton. They were, a contender there for, 5 or 6 years in a row early in the aughts that decade. And, Northwestern's won like crazily, was it one more Big Ten titles the last 30 years than like Michigan or something. It's like wild. Nebraska should be good, although ever are. But yeah, Illinois, and also I'll say, and I never made it to all the Big Ten stadiums. I didn't cover, but the experience, and Champaign was a nice town. I enjoyed the town from what I could see, and the campus looked all right. But the stadium atmosphere was definitely lacking at I think Memorial Stadium there in Illinois.
that's true. It's not even really that. It's like the most nondescript campus and football stadium around. At any rate, the Steelers will play the Browns next week. And, it kind of looks to me a lot like the fact that the Browns are, they've kind of figured out a way they have to play for a few weeks in order to win, and that is just be very, very conservative and try not to make mistakes and just try and pound the ball.
Yeah, and if that's what we'll see how many of their guys come back, on the line, and if Nick Chubb's able to come back by next week, and I guess even Baker Mayfield could, but that seems unlikely at this point. They still got a talent, Denzel Ward down now too. They're losing their attrition there too, but their defense is what's going to keep them in the game, and that's of course the Steelers' weak point is offense. So they're still going to have to score enough points to beat them, even if the Browns' offense is conservative and sort of undermanned. It's still it's the Steelers are going to score some points, and if the Steelers aren't, we've seen their offense not be able to score at times. And if they still have Myles Garrett to deal with and everything else, there's no guarantee they can do that. So we'll see. It's a long way to get to next Sunday before we know who's going to be available for the Browns and everything. But it looks a lot more winnable now than it did a couple weeks ago, that's for sure.
Well, I think that's the big thing. But you look at the Steelers, what really needs to happen for them, in terms of getting healthy and getting some things together? What do they need to do for 2 weeks? For these 2 weeks to get ready to play?
There's been certainly, I don't think anybody can deny, there's been progress on the offensive line the last couple of weeks. I think if you kind of isolate each individual player, too, it's not like as if necessarily, who their opponent or whatever it might be, or just a fluke or whatever, or just, stats of when the sack or anything like that. I think it's objectively, watch and see, the penalties are down for sure. That's not that was really hindering them there in those two home games against Oakland, Las Vegas and Cincinnati when they lost. The line's been better even against the Packers in terms of keeping its penalties down, in terms of the run blocking. We've seen Najee Harris have a little bit of room. Ben didn't get I don't think Ben even got hit last game. So I think just, if you do watch, Kendrick Green's been making strides. Trey Turner's been good, and I was worried about him kind of being at the end of his line. Feel a little better about that now. Dotson's been closer to what people hoped he'd be. I don't know that's the big mystery of what we'll learn early in practice next week is, now that Zach Banner's active, how they approach that. You could approach that 3 different ways. Keep the status quo. And part of it will be if Dan Moore is injured. He left the last game. We don't know much about that in terms of, there's only been one real practice, I guess two practices. One of them was a little shorter than the other. But since that game, we'll see if Dan Moore's healthy. And if he is, then you have the option of keeping the status quo, the option of moving Chooks to left tackle, which was your plan to start the season, and put Banner at right tackle, or keep Dan Moore left tackle and just put Banner at right tackle and bench Chooks. So you can make a case, I think, for any of those three scenarios, both for winning that game in Cleveland and winning the rest of this season, and certainly for the future. If you want, I don't think, but look at this point, like Chooks will be back next year. So maybe you figure if it's close, the tiebreaker is, let's go with the rookie of Dan Moore, see if we can develop him more, get him more experience, and you're better off with him then as a starter going forward. Then, you know, if Dan Moore proves to be a legit, you know, starting left tackle in the NFL, even if he's not a Pro Bowler, even if he's not one of the best ones, if he's adequate enough to be a starting left tackle, and you get him on a fourth round pick rookie salary for a couple years here, so you have to give him his first, you know, veteran contract. That's good. That's a good cap situation to be in. You know, that checks off one little box. The left tackle usually can swallow up a lot of your cap space. And if you're looking for a veteran quarterback, which they're going to be here at some point probably, that's something. So that's the one thing in terms of the lineup you look for, and you know, the better play out of the O-line. And injuries, they're slowly getting guys back. But I think especially the groin gang, all those guys, get them off their feet a little bit, off the practice field for 4 or 5 days here, and then get them back, and maybe then that'll help everybody heal up a little better too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make a case probably, right, for the fact that if you move Zach Banner in, maybe there's a different way you want to go on the left side.
Yeah, that's I would remember the plan was up until Banner was deemed not ready. The plan was Chooks Okorafor to play left tackle and Zach Banner right tackle. So that option's available to you now. That's what you would evaluate as coaches, as a staff, all in, you know, as a personnel group, all off season. They let Alejandro Villanueva walk. They let Matt Filer walk. I know Filer's been more of a guard, but he was a pretty decent tackle for them for a season. They didn't go out in free agency and address it, and that's kind of like you wondered. You had to know. I'm so kind of surprised looking back, especially in the time too. They didn't sense like, well, I guess they're planning on taking a tackle high in the draft, and that didn't happen until the fourth round. And you know how things fall in the draft; you can't really plan the draft. But there's been veterans, just like there have been veterans at guard available. So whether that's because they're content with Dan Moore, anyway. The point being is that remember, Mike Tomlin pushed it as Chooks Okorafor was a better left tackle than right tackle, right? So if you believe that, and you believe Banner's ready, and you've invested 5 years now in Zach Banner getting him ready to play, and you know, injury and whatever else, he hasn't been able to, then put your money where your mouth is. The I guess status quo is that Banner plays right tackle and Chooks left tackle. But if Chooks in the final year of his contract, Dan Moore has shown signs that he can be your left tackle of the future. I don't think he's proven he can be. I don't think he's been great. I don't think you don't want to. Well, you know, I guess this is what I'm saying. Is you could probably make the case that the Steelers would be better with Chooks for the rest of this season, but only marginally enough so that if it's close, you know what, to start the rookie, have him take his lumps. You know what you got then. You hope he's better by the end of the year, and then you feel a lot better about 2022. So we'll see how it goes. But it could. I don't know. I don't know. There's not much hints there so far, and the Moore injury last game too. Also, that can make the decision very easy, I guess.
No question about it. Well, Chris, I really appreciate you taking some time and breaking it down. Enjoy the weekend, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure to spend Friday night with you, Paul. Take care.
All right, that's Chris Adamski on Paul's Ice. It's 93.7 The Fan. And of course, there's been a lot of different discussions about it. And it's usually built around the Larry Fitzgerald situation in 2003. Of course, when Larry Fitzgerald finished second to Jason White, and a lot of people here blame two local columnists, Cook and Smizek, for voting for Jason White. That brought a funny little moment here with Dave Wannstedt that he was on earlier with the PM team. And, of course, he was not really a fond of Ron Cook. In the end, he felt Ron Cook got a little too personal with his criticisms, but, you know, it is what it is. At any rate, Pony brought the subject up, and here's what Dave Wannstedt had to say.
I just wonder, will the local media rally behind the guy? You might remember this. You weren't coaching Pitt yet, but like in 03 when Larry Fitzgerald finished second, we had local guys. Ron Cook voted for Jason White, for crying out loud. So I just wonder
wait a second. Back up. Think about what you said.
Okay.
Ron Cook, considered a source, right?
True.
I mean,
very good point.
So So, you know, that's be my first thought that comes to there, and I'm sure most of the people in Pittsburgh. But, no, Kenny, honestly, he deserves it. You know, and Pitt's winning. I mean, they got a great team, and Pat Narduzzi's done a fabulous job. I mean, I'm excited for Heather, the athletic director, the chancellor. I've met them all. I've been with them all. First-class people and committed to Pitt. I actually snuck through there. I hadn't been back since I left, and I was in seeing my mother this summer.
Okay.
And went through there, and it, you know, and Doran can verify. I mean, it is fabulous. And that doesn't happen. I mean, every coach, you know, wants to make improvements, but if the athletic director, if the chancellor is not committed, it's not going to happen. And hats off to Heather and Chancellor and everybody involved there, because their facilities, and I've been to most facilities around the country, they are outstanding.
That to me is tremendous. That was hilarious. Ron Cook, consider the source. And I'm sure all of Pittsburgh would agree, he says.
Ron Cook, consider the source.
That was hilarious. One of the things about it, though, is, I mean, Pitt fans need to let it go. It's not Ron Cook and Bob Smizek's fault that Jason White won the Heisman. I firmly believe this. In my heart of hearts, I believe this. If Pitt would have beat Miami that game, last game of the year, and gone to the Orange Bowl, it would have been enough to sway enough voters Larry Fitzgerald's way ahead of. But, you know, people got to remember, Jason White, they were 12-1. And he had 40 touchdowns and like 8 interceptions. It's not like he wasn't deserving. We can sit here and say, we can sit here and say something like this whole thing, you know, with respect to, them not necessarily, the two local guys voting for Larry Fitzgerald. And believe me, I believe that Larry Fitzgerald was the best football player in the country that year. But they were 8-4. They were 8-4, I think, you know, and they ended up in like the Tire Bowl, the Meineke Tire Bowl, or whatever it's called. But, at the end of the day, if he wins that game, and I think that's the same thing for Kenny Pickett. Honestly, it probably, honestly, he doesn't have to have a great game tomorrow. They just have to win. And he'll put himself into the discussion. But if they lose, I mean, then all of a sudden you start to, wonder, will the national media come back and kind of take a look at him again? I don't think so. You know, I think they need to win tomorrow. And that's the whole thing with people blaming Cook and Smizek. It's silly. Those two could have flipped their vote, and Larry Fitzgerald still would have lost. And the bottom line is, if they just beat Miami that last game and go to the Orange Bowl, I really believe it would have been enough to sway. It would have been enough to sway the voters that were still holding out. It's just one of those things that I think people do put some stock. I do think that, people put some stock in the idea of winning. But I mean, if you look at the voting from that year, it wasn't two votes that kept him or held him back. Jason White had 319 first place votes. If Cook and Smizek were to change their votes, it'd be 317 first place votes to Larry Fitzgerald's 255. I mean, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, it's very clear to me that, you know, people just want to revise history. And I really think, again, if Pitt wins that game against Miami, Fitzgerald probably wins it. But they don't, and a bunch of people say, well, you know what, they didn't really, you know, beat Miami, and he didn't have a great game against the, you know, the best secondary maybe in the country. Like, guess what? We're going to go with Jason White, whose team's 12-1. So anyway, you know who finished ninth in Heisman voting that year, Bill? In 2003, Jason White was first. Larry Fitzgerald was second. You know who finished ninth? One, Benjamin Roethlisberger.
Wouldn't have thought that.
How about that? He finished ninth. He actually had five people voted for him first place in the Heisman.
That's not bad.
Five people. I didn't know he had five family members who had votes. He actually had a pretty good season that year, actually. He actually had more yards throwing. He threw for more yards than Jason White did. There you go. Anyway.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.